On our show this week, we have two Francescas. We have Francesca Albanese, who is the UN Special Rapporteur for Palestine, and we have Francesca Fiorentini, who runs a channel called The Bituation Room on YouTube. And Francesca Albanese will talk to us about the No Peace Without Accountability regarding the war crimes that have been committed in Gaza, and Francesca Fiorentini will speak to us about the rights, the American rights, civil war over Israel. So first, Francesca Albanese.
First of all, I regret not being with you, as I would have done under normal circumstances today, and this is due to the travel ban imposed on me by the US administration. What is my crime, having done my job, having delivered what I have to, 6 reports, 7 now, to the United Nations, bringing to the fore the fact that enlighten the kind of crimes, the gravity, the depth of crimes that Israel is committing and increasing with the complicity of a variety of actors. The report that caused the sanctions that remained still unaddressed, and for this I don't blame the United States alone. I think that it's absolutely necessary that the international community acts in unison to make sure that the sanctions are lifted, and this ad hominem measure is not repeated against anyone else. But in the face of this, the responsibility is also of member states. And I agree with a colleague who has spoken before me. The gravity of the situation today speaks to a vullness that is becoming bigger and bigger within the United Nations system. That a UN mandate holder who serves pro bono the United Nations on the basis of trust, knowing that he or she will be protected by the organization, is one. There is also 2 years of attacks against UNRWA that finally have been clarified by the International Court of Justice itself. There are the continuous attacks against anyone who speaks on behalf of the oppressed, and anyone who tries to advance justice, and this is unacceptable. So what is that I would have shared with you in person today after the presentation of my report yesterday, and you saw the level of attacks that even that report has elicited? I've been accused of witchcraft, no less. I could have been accused of anything, because my reports are written by a human being. So I would be happy to see for once anyone engaging or critical of me, engaging on the substance of my reports. And it has not happened. Israel has accused me of witchcraft in 2025. Because this doesn't only have to do with who I am as a voice extremely critical of Israel, extremely critical of apartheid Israel, and who's tired of seeing mothers, fathers, and children slaughtered every day, using and misusing even concepts of international law. And today, under the banner of peace, 200 Palestinians have been slaughtered in Gaza, and no one looks today because there is a ceasefire. This is the meaning of ceasefire according to Israel. And for denouncing all this and the system of complicity that upholds it, a woman Because this is witchcraft is something that is primarily addressed to women. People like me, up to a few hundred years ago, would be burned in a public square for speaking truth. All the more, speaking truth to patriarchy and to power. We are still there. We're a man who represent an entity, a state in this case, which is committing crimes. As it breathes, accuses a woman of witchcraft. And the fact that the Israeli ambassador was allowed to speak and go on with its rants for 7 minutes without being stopped tells a lot also about the august institution that you are part of, not able to lift the sanctions against a person protected under the Convention on Privileges and Immunities, not able to stop the representative of an apartheid state turning genocidal, because this is what Israel is an apartheid state that has turned its settler colonialism into genocidal to respect the basic principles of the institution it's part of. But this is the core of the matter, and this is where I would like to insist now. It's in a context of sustained and intersecting violations of peremptory norms of international law that Israel's settler colonialism has been allowed to fester, that the apartheid has been consolidated and normalized, and member states have, with few exceptions, have done not much to prevent genocide, to stop genocidal acts, and to punish all the crimes connected to this genocide, from incitement to execution. And so the genocide continues. But my last report tries to add something more. I looked at what member states have done, especially in the last 753 days, and I realized that again there has been more support than deterrence of toward the acts of genocide that Israel has been committing. And in fact, the international community has enabled it through diplomatic fora that, instead of serving peace, have been used to advance dehumanizing language against the Palestinians, or legitimizing Israel's false claim from self-defense to fighting against terrorists or human shields. We keep on seeing this. The betrayal of the very function of the United Nations preserving peace by using international law. Israel claims self-defense for the soldiers who are killed in the Gaza Strip. But this is Palestinian self-defense. I'm sorry, but the Palestinians, I mean, Israel cannot claim self-defense in the land that occupies over and over. And the military ties that many states in the General Assembly are still link them, sorry, still have with Israel, make them responsible. And the men and women who are in government in those states personally liable, because transferring or buying weapons, intelligence, and having joint trainings with genocidal states shows intent and leads to complicity. And of course, trade. How come that after 2 years of genocide, member states continue to have businesses with Israel, primarily Western states, but not only, including states in the Arab region? How come? And I have to say, it pierces my heart, especially I've just come back from South Africa, where I've had some very few and uplifting days, reminding myself of how important is the struggle for Palestine, which was at the core of the South African struggle, but not for not I don't I really think don't think that we have appreciated enough what Nelson Mandela used to say. Our struggle, our freedom is not complete without the freedom of the Palestinians, because the Palestinians, like South Africans in the end of the apartheid situation, were and are the victims of European settler colonialism. And are paying the price for it, and are being tested. They are considered, they are treated as guinea pigs of an experiment that keeps on going. And this is not against the Palestinians themselves, and it's not against the UN themselves. It's transforming the very Arab region into a project for decolonization, because we have been fooled by the idea that we have a settler colonialism. Greater Israel, it's not about the expansion of physical border. Greater Israel is the expansion of dominion and a concept of subjugation, and the Arab region is already falling into this. Because if we look at many countries that in the past 20 years have been put on their knees, from Iraq to Libya, to Lebanon and Syria today. This is the realization of Greater Israel in the bigger scheme of US imperialistic dominion. This is happening under our watch, under your watch. And look at this is the last point I wanted to raise. The humanitarian function, the fact that for 7 months the humanitarian aid, instead of being delivered only and according to the principles that had been set including by the International Court of Justice, Israel had to allow unfettered access of humanitarian aid. Aid has been The distribution of aid has been left in the hands of the state which was committing genocide, and the state was its partner in crimes, the United States. This is the situation. I mean, the Palestinian sacrifice mirrors the incapacity of the international community to come together and deliver the promise of the UN, of the UN Charter, and the United Nations as a whole, this organization that has just turned 80. Excellencies, this institution is not in a good shape. And what happens to Palestine, what happens to the people in Sudan, what happens to the people in Congo, speak the same language. The United Nations is not able to preserve peace and stability and prosperity and to realize human rights. This is the brutal reality. And it's becoming, as I've said already 1 year ago, more and more irrelevant to the younger generations. They are not like mine, believing in this ideal world represented by the United Nations, which was there to prevent horrible crimes, including genocide. After 2 years of watching the Gaza genocide and the dispossession of the Palestinians, wherever they are, the blaming of the Palestinians, wherever they are, including in the United Nations, this is for many not just trauma, it's memory in the making. We still have time, we still have a little time to recover, but we need to do the right thing. And for this, we need principled and United Nations, made also of the countries who broke the chains of colonization, of colonialism years and decades ago, that today are not as strongly aligned with the quest for freedom of the Palestinians as they should be, as they are naturally called to be. And I want to close on this sober note, calling for a moment of reflection on where the United Nations, not just for Palestine, but for all of us, should go next. Thank you.
And that was Francesca Albanese, the UN Special Rapporteur on Palestine. And coming up next, we have Francesca Fiorentini from the Bituation Room. So she's going to talk about the right's civil war over Israel.
There's a massive battle on the right in the United States. A custody battle, if you will, over MAGA, only if both parents were alcoholics. A civil war, if both sides were Confederates. A real lose-lose fight. And a fight that breaks over one thing. Israel.
They got to stop being so obsessed with Israel and so obsessed with the Jews. You know, it's not the Israelis that are going to have another 9/11 here in our country.
Hang on a second.
You go fight Iran. You go form an army and fight Iran. You go to Israel and fight. We are American people. It's not our problem.
And whether or not the U.S. should keep supporting the country to the tune of billions of dollars each year because it's America's strategic ally or is part of a Christian prophecy to get Jesus to come back to Earth, which, let me tell you, he does not want to do, okay? The humidity with climate change, it frizzes out his curls. And it's a battle that, as an outside leftist spectator, is both fascinating, terrifying, and actually kind of important to understand. And a battle that, in my opinion, has already been won. And it's all blown up over Tucker Carlson and Nick Fuentes having a little father-son heart-to-heart.
Well, I thought you were a Fed.
Guys, you're both Feds. Somehow, to many on the right, that interview crossed some sort of Rubicon. Tucker Carlson was seen as a firewall between real white nationalists and ones who just do it for the cameras. And the other person who was a firewall, well, he was murdered. Now, before we begin, I apologize in advance for the number of truly hellish people I'm about to remind you exist. So to placate that, here's a Russian robot eating shit during its debut. Humankind has finally recreated your drunk grandfather at Thanksgiving, coming out from the bathroom saying he only peed his pants a little bit before face-planting into dessert. Helen, I only got a little poo-poo on the rug. Oh. So let's talk about the crisis on the right that is pitting Christian Zionists, Jewish conservatives, and the Heritage Foundation against America First white supremacists like Nick Fuentes and Tucker Carlson. And let's look at how the Republican Party has been dragged farther and farther to the right, not kicking and screaming, but gleefully goose-stepping. Cause and effect are crazy things. You know, like if you get to a party late and try to play catch-up by drinking 7 shots of tequila, you will be puking in a stranger's toilet. Or if you keep insisting on supporting a genocidal foreign ethnostate and consistently shut down honest debate, protest, or policies to change said support by calling those people anti-Semites, you will in fact give rise to anti-Semitism. And yes, I'm talking about Israel and the United States' ongoing support for 2 years and counting of a genocide on the people of Gaza that has not stopped despite the fictitious ceasefire. And before we talk about how the right is turning on Israel, let's remember that it has long been progressives, the left, and especially Jewish, Palestinian, and Muslim Americans that have been leading the fight to stop U.S.'s support of Israel's crimes for decades. After October 7th, it began with early calls for an immediate ceasefire, including from 18 progressive members of Congress. And it continued with student-led encampments for Gaza and grassroots fundraising efforts, and progressed through the 2024 campaign cycle in the form of the Uncommitted Movement that tried, to no avail, to get the Democratic leadership to understand they were losing touch with their voters over their breathless support of Israel's genocide. And the entire time, that movement to stop indiscriminate killing with our tax dollars was called radical, biased, and of course, anti-Semitic.
Students shouldn't be blocked from going to campus just because they're Jewish, or learning in a classroom as opposed to being forced online because they're Jewish. It is simply unacceptable. And you know what? We have to query whether or not we would tolerate this if this were people dressed up in KKK outfits or KKK regalia making comments about people who are African American.
But what an outrage to single out Jewish people and make them the target of this level of hate and anti-Semitism. If these were black students being denied being able to go to class, I have a feeling there would be outrage in the mainstream media and in the White House.
Okay, quickly, not only were Jewish students not prevented from going to class, but why the need to compare this to black students to make a non-existent point? Because black students are being threatened. After Trump was reelected, black students were sent racist text messages. And after Charlie Kirk was killed, HBCUs went into lockdown after threats. And guess what? No outrage from the White House. So, But the point is, anyone who claims that the right is more outspoken on the issue of Palestine or has taken more heat for supporting the issue than the left, allow me to introduce you to Mahmoud Khalil, Mohsen Madawi, Rameza Öztürk, who were all detained for their speech on Palestine, to say nothing of the dozens of people who lost job offers or are on blacklists because of their opposition to genocide. But hey, I'm glad Amy Schumer is thin now. Ozempic and Zionism, truly a miracle diet. So let's now turn to the right, because historically, they haven't had the same internal debate over U.S. support for Israel. Republicans have, for the most part, consistently supported Israel in all funding and policy positions. And though it's a close call, they receive more funding from the Israeli lobby than Democrats. And that makes sense, because the right loves foreign wars in the Middle East. They got us into two there, and Israel is a perfect excuse to stay. The right loves militarism, military expansionism, and profiting from weapons manufacturers. They are also massive Islamophobes, and so the arrangement of Israel buying weapons and then using them on the Muslim-majority Palestinians, basically as guinea pigs, has worked out great. The right also loves the concept of ethno-nationalism and apartheid, one dominant race or religion for some, and walls, prisons, and policing for everyone else. Israel is in many ways a model for what the right is trying to create in this country, a white ethnostate vis-a-vis ICE and mass deportations, mass incarceration, and policing. What's not to love? And to top all that off, the Christian right in the US has bought into the idea that in order for Jesus to come back to earth for the rapture to happen, Israel, and especially Jerusalem, must belong to the Jews, as explained here by Pastor John Hagee and guy who said God sent Hitler to earth so that Israel would be created.
He's not coming to Washington. He's not coming to Rome. He's coming to the city of David. He's coming to Jerusalem. He will rule and reign for 1,000 years of absolute peace. It's called the millennial reign. The lion will lay down with the lamb. He will set up his throne on the Temple Mount. Kings and queens and presidents and prime ministers and monarchs and mighty men of the earth will come and kneel.
Monarchs and mighty men will come, lambs laying with lions. Why does the rapture sound like Epstein Island? Of course, Christian Zionists hide the ball on what happens to Jewish people when Jesus gets back, but that's down the road a piece. Jump into my unmarked white van, children of God. We're going the same way. In practice, Israel represents everything the right loves, and many on the right know this, from AIPAC-backed elected senators like Tom Cotton to Representative Randy Fine, known for tweeting things like starve away in reference to Palestinians in Gaza, and for saying things like this.
We nuked the Japanese twice in order to get unconditional surrender. That needs to be the same here. There is something deeply, deeply wrong with this culture, and it needs to be defeated.
Yeah, something in the culture. He probably means the Mediterranean diet, right? What? Oh, it's Islam. Just imagine if an American politician said there's something in Jewish culture that must be defeated, and put a pin in that, because we're likely headed there. And of course, shit-stained Scrooge is perhaps the most bought and paid for pro-Zionist politician of them all. He was given $100 million from Sheldon Adelson's widow to annex the West Bank, he's been promised the Trump Riviera in Gaza, and he greenlit nearly $8 billion more in weapons to Israel.
Bibi would call me so many times, can you get me this weapon, that weapon, that weapon? Some of them I never heard of, Bibi, and I made them. But we'd get them here, wouldn't we? And they are the best. They are the best.
I say, what's this one, Bibi? The super duper baby head scooper 9000? Okay.
So if MAGA leadership is all in on Israel, then why, all of a sudden, are figures on the right not giving Trump his flowers for negotiating a fake ceasefire, and instead are saying things like this?
Trump wants a Nobel Peace Prize, by the way, for the planned ethnic cleansing so that they could profit on the land and turn it into a beach town. So let me say this. This is our never again.
They're not Hamas. They're literally women and children, and you can't unsee the amount of pictures and videos of children that have been blown to pieces.
So it wasn't really a land without people for a people without land.
Absolutely not.
I have less ability sometimes online to criticize the Israeli government about backlash than actual Israelis do. Mm-hmm. And that's really, really weird.
Israel, whether it realizes it or not, has made itself the villain of the world in letting this thing go on so long. They have lost support amongst their dearest friends. And even the entire Democrat Party here in the United States has turned against them, and they're losing Republicans by the day.
Now, I should have warned you at the start that this video will have a lot of worst person you know makes a great point moments. But take heed, ye anti-genocide progressives, and steer clear of the rocks upon which these grifty sirens dwell. For I can assure you that these people are all still the worst people, as evidenced by the fact that just before Megyn Kelly said that, she also said that Palestinians are faking their own starvation.
They're fine having their own children starve, just as long as they can put them on camera and show them off to the world.
Wow, that's a bold assertion coming from a woman who absolutely starves herself to put herself on camera and show off to the world. The bad extensions can't hide those arms, girl. Eat something. Now, not all right-wingers are questioning the right's fealty to Israel, and not all of those who are have the exact same critiques. But the question I'm asking is why? Why, after decades, are they turning on Israel? Now, first off, while the right might live in a different reality on issues like the 2020 election, or whether shitting your pants on horse dewormer will prevent COVID-19, they are reading the room when it comes to Israel. 53% of all Americans now have a negative view of Israel, and 60% believe the U.S. should stop sending weapons. That includes 56% of Republicans and 66% of independents. And it's even more stark when looking at young Americans, who often are the ones that get their news online where these hosts live. As Politico called it, an entire generation of Americans is turning on Israel. While 71% of Democrats under 50 have a negative view of Israel, 50% of Republicans under 50 have a negative view as well, up from 35% in just the last 3 years. Listen to Kentucky Representative Thomas Massie, who, along with Marjorie Taylor Greene, is one of the only Republicans to vote against more aid to Israel, discuss how his voters are feeling on this.
To use an MIT term or a math term, support for foreign aid to Israel has been monotonically decreasing. That means it may not decrease at the same rate every year, but every year it has decreased. There's been no year in which it has gone up. It's monotonically decreasing.
And I am monotonically not paying attention to what you're saying because you sound monotonous. Clearly, there's a reason Massie isn't the face of the right's anti-Israel movement. But he does know that his stance on this gives him an edge with voters.
Now, in a Republican primary, and I can only speak for one congressional district in Kentucky, my position that I've held since 2012 is now more favorable than less favorable.
And other conservatives in office and on the internet know their stances on Israel also give them that edge. But despite voters' opinions shifting, what hasn't shifted is mainstream media's coverage of the issue. And without mainstream media coverage or mainstream Republicans breaking on their pro-Israel consensus, that makes the issue ripe for people who report what others won't, while also selling you obscure dog food. Podcasters. Both podcasters on the left and on the right. And right-wingers like Tucker Carlson and Megyn Kelly come from mainstream news. And part of their brand now is saying what mainstream media won't. So of course they're gonna want to bite off the Israel apple. Carlson, who used to be the biggest military bootlicking cheerleader for war with Iraq and Afghanistan, laced with massive Islamophobia, is now out here doing this to neoconservatives like Ted Cruz.
How many people live in Iran, by the way?
I don't know the population.
At all?
No, I don't know the population.
You don't know the population of the country you seek to topple?
How many people live in Iran?
92 million.
Okay. Yeah.
How could you not know that?
I don't sit around memorizing population tables.
Well, it's kind of relevant because you're calling for the overthrow of the government.
This feels like a kid that's trying to phone in a book report in a class taught by his mom. Oh, come on, mom. Just give me an A- and let's go kill Arabs. That interview was wild, and not just because we all entered the black mirror hell of us smiling at something Tucker Carlson said, but because it foreshadowed the coming split on the right over Israel, and the sun setting on the neoconservative movement. R.I.P. Dick Cheney, who is enjoying hell way too much.
And what happens if my dad starts Tai Chi tomorrow?
And that sun arguably began to set with Trump himself
all the way back in 2016. Remember, Trump won in part because of his opposition to another Bush, and also his isolationism. Trump said the Iraq War was wrong, not morally, but because it was a waste. And that isolationism has evolved into a rebooted America First movement and utter contempt for any foreign aid, whether to Ukraine or to USAID in the form of HIV meds, or, I mean, tutus for trans Inuit ballerinas. And so now, blind support for Israel to those on the right feels like it isn't America first. And usually, glaring hypocrisy for right-wingers is not a problem, okay? They are masters at cognitive dissonance, believing Trump is a pedophile-fighting QAnon leader while also being best friends with Jeffrey Epstein, or draining the swamp in D.C. by turning it into the president's personal piggy bank. They contain multitudes. But on Israel, it seems like they are finally beginning to point out the hypocrisy of dishing out billions abroad while the national economy goes to shit.
America first, Israel first. Are you loyal to America? Are you not?
Here goes another $100 billion to Ukraine or $30 billion to Israel, but yet nobody can afford health insurance premiums. And then I'm getting yelled at by my Republican colleagues for saying that out loud. I'm like, this is insane.
I'm mad at our leaders for spending their time and my money focusing on someone else's country.
And beyond that, MAGA doesn't like how the U.S.'s unwavering support of Israel, no matter what it does, kind of makes their dear leader look like a cuck.
Well, we have an occupied administration. There's no question. Trump is occupied by Zionists, okay? He's completely impotent.
Oh, he's impotent, but not when it comes to Israel. I mean, arguably, Israel's the only thing that makes it move anymore. There's going to be a Trump Riviera, beachfront property. Hello? The other reason that the right is turning on Israel is that Zionism has all the trappings of the thing they hate. Woke identity politics. Zionism is predicated on the idea that Jews the world over are persecuted, should be a protected class, and need a safe space called the State of Israel. Now, the left's critiques of Zionism are based around Israel's hypocrisy, that this supposed safe space is only for some and not for the Palestinians, whose homeland they took over and currently occupy. But the right's critiques circle around their supposed hatred of identity politics. Candace Owens, who was unceremoniously let go from the Daily Wire last March over her comments on Israel, has said that Zionists operate like Black Lives Matter. She wrote on Instagram that just as Black Lives Matter radicals would threaten and intimidate white people's lives by constantly smearing and libeling people into submission, these radicals do the same. Yeah, all the white people smeared into posting a black square.
When do the reparations begin?
But the reaction to the identity politics of Zionism was also discussed during the now infamous Tucker Carlson, Nick Fuentes interview.
The blood and soil nationalism of Israel, it stems from this ethno-religion, which is Judaism.
Well, this is, just BLM, the new version. This is identity politics. They're engaging in identity politics.
The entire right has been so trained to hate any whiff of political victimhood based on identity that of course they would naturally be allergic to a project like Zionism, which thrives on it. Now, caveat, any political victimhood based on an identity that isn't white and Christian. The only identities that matter to the right, as Nick Fuentes explains here.
You say identity politics like it's a bad thing. I think identity is reality.
Let's remember that Nick Fuentes came on the scene via the Unite the Right rally, which had deep ties to both MAGA and to the white nationalist group that so believes in white identity politics, it's called Identity Europa. And so while Fuentes might say scathingly accurate things like this,
we have gone to war with the Houthis. We have bombed Iran. We have given Israel $8 billion in military aid. Our Speaker of the House is there now. We buried the Epstein scandal. We blackmailed the Ivy League universities. We're deporting thousands of people that criticized Israel, taking their citizenship. We're going to censor TikTok and the anti-Israel content there. And now we're going to revoke disaster relief aid for any blue city that dared to criticize Israel in the middle of a famine that they are imposing in Gaza. How can anybody continue to support this?
Ooh, that's based. But also, since when does he care about deportations? Let's remember that Fuentes, at his core, is very much a Nazi incel.
I don't want
touch. I don't want a relationship. You know what I want? Total Aryan victory. That's all I want.
You know what's so ironic about that? If Nick had been Jewish, he probably wouldn't have been an incel because he would have gotten laid on birthright. And I feel like Israel's really kicking itself for not creating a birthright for Gentiles. The name is right there. Birthwhite. And this gets to the heart of where the far-right movement has gone and been allowed to go under Trump, which is Christian nationalism, a belief in the supremacy of white, male, heterosexual Christianity and state power above all else. And unlike Christian evangelicals and Christian Zionists like John Hagee and Mike Huckabee, they're not convinced of the prophecy.
And then the Christian Zionists who are, well, Christian Zionists, like, what is that?
Right.
And I could just say for myself, I dislike them more than anybody, you know, because like what? Because it's Christian heresy and I'm offended by that as a Christian.
God, look at Nick's face. Look at that glee. He's biting his tongue to prevent himself from smiling. He's so f***ing delighted by Tucker Carlson calling Christian Zionism heresy. Because unlike anti-Zionists on the left, anti-Zionists on the right always mention one group in particular when it comes to who Israel is killing.
And I also want to point out that Israel bombed a Catholic church in Gaza.
When Jewish people die in Israel, it's wall-to-wall coverage. But when Christians die all over the world, nobody talks about it.
In a couple, at least a couple of different occasions, the Israeli government bombed churches in Gaza and killed a bunch of Christians. They didn't accidentally bomb two churches and kill these Christians, and they never apologized for it.
Tucker Carlson has even interviewed a Palestinian pastor from Bethlehem, which is good. We should hear what he has to say and what is happening to the very holy place for many religions. But it's also notable that Palestinian Christians are only 1.7% of the population, and that the vast majority of Palestinians are Muslim. This is a little bit like being a vegan, but not because of cows being slaughtered in factory farms, but because of the jackrabbits who live near factory farms that drink the poisoned water from the runoff. It's not not an issue, but it's weird to single them out. You might be a bit of a jackrabbit supremacist. Which brings us to the final and perhaps most important reason a lot of the right is turning on Israel. They are, in fact, anti-Semitic. And I know, it came as a shock to me as well, especially after the ADL gave Elon Musk's Sieg Heil a hearty pass. And being against Israel's crimes is a good vehicle for the right to onboard its followers from anti-Zionism to anti-Semitism. Whereas, for example, the anti-genocide movement on the progressive left is led by Jewish Americans, and anti-Semitism is understood as a problem and called out, the anti-Zionist right has no problem going there. Candace Owens, famous for saying that Hitler's biggest problem was that he had aspirations beyond Germany, is fully on some Jews didn't die on 9/11 level of anti-Semitic conspiracies on her channel, going so far as to blame Jews for all modern vices.
This entire American culture, which has grown quite perverse, it's a culture of vices that we are suffering from today, a culture that is filled with pornography, gambling, transgenderism, radical feminism, modern psychology, pharmaceuticals. If you research these topics historically, you will recognize that they were brought to and fought for on our shores by people like Emma Goldman on feminism, Sigmund Freud, the father of modern psychology, the gambling empire is where the Adelson empire wealth comes from, as are many pharmaceuticals like the Sackler family. These people had their names on buildings in Tel Aviv, the owners of Purdue Pharma, the architects of the opioid epidemic, pornography. Our boy Al Goldstein took happy credit for that, right? He's the one who notoriously said the only reason that Jews are in pornography is that we think Christ sucks, Catholicism sucks. We don't believe in authoritarianism. Pornography becomes a way of defiling Christian culture as it penetrates to the very heart of the American mainstream.
Okay, but if Jews are hell-bent on destroying Christian culture, how do you explain them writing all the good Christmas songs? Silver Bells, Winter Wonderland, Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire. It doesn't add up. Unless, have we tried playing them backwards? For his part, Nick Fuentes, a notorious Holocaust denier, does not distinguish between Zionists and Jews writ large.
The Jews, they work together as a team. They're tribalist.
Okay, but if they're all working together, how do you explain Larry David hating Alan Dershowitz?
It's way beyond Israel for Nick Fuentes, though he uses an anti-Zionist critique as a hook to start saying a little bit more.
The main challenge to that, a big challenge to that, is organized Jewry in America. I don't think Bill Ackman is capable of that. I don't think Shaul Nadelson is capable of that. I don't think Yoram Hazony is capable of that, for that matter. And many other, you know, on the right and the left. And I see it, I see Jewishness as the common denominator. And you're right. It's not all Jewish people feel the same way. No one would say that, but that does seem to be the common denominator. And I just feel like it needs to be called out explicitly.
And if you thought Tucker had any pushback to that, it was basically, I hear you, but why you gotta be that explicit? Because Carlson is far better at couching his anti-Semitism, like he did when he spoke at Charlie Kirk's funeral and likened Charlie's murder to the murder of Jesus Christ.
And it actually reminds me of my favorite story ever. So it's about 2,000 years ago in Jerusalem, and Jesus shows up and he starts talking about the people in power, and he starts doing the worst thing that you can do, which is telling the truth about people, and they hate it, and they just go bonkers. They hate it, and they become obsessed with making him stop. This guy's got to stop talking. We've got to shut this guy up. And I can just sort of picture the scene in a lamp-lit room with a bunch of guys sitting around eating hummus, thinking about what do we do about this guy telling the truth about us. We must make him stop talking. And there's always one guy with the bright idea, and I could just hear him say, I've got an idea, why don't we just kill him? That'll shut him up. That'll fix the problem.
My God, that laugh. Like, if that laugh happens anywhere in a movie, you know that's the guy that's going to be pointing a gun at the hero in the final scene, going, I told you to stay away. But you couldn't listen, could you? Dad. So I guess it's probably time to mention that the murder of Charlie Kirk turbocharged the rift on the right over Israel. Because as questions emerged over what motivated Tyler Robinson, and as Crazy Eyes Patel forced a narrative about Robinson being a hardened leftist, so emerged the conspiracies. The conspiracies that, of course, have led to Israel. For months, Candace Owens has been heavily implying Israel killed Charlie Kirk for starting to ask too many questions about the country's influence on American politics. And let's be real, it hasn't helped that Bibi Netanyahu has put out multiple videos dispelling the conspiracy.
Now some are peddling these disgusting rumors, perhaps out of obsession, perhaps with Qatari funding. What I do know is this: Charlie Kirk was a great man. And a great man deserves honor, not lies. Rest in peace, Charlie Kirk. May your memory be a blessing.
I don't know. There's a suspicious jump cut there. Anyone who uses jump cuts can't be trusted. I just think it's funny that Netanyahu has issued more apologies for Charlie Kirk than to the Palestinian man who was hospitalized after being gang raped by the IDF. Anyway, I'm sure those videos are dropping any minute. What? They're celebrating the perpetrators? Okay. Anyway, back to how to stop anti-Semitism. It is interesting when reflecting on Kirk's murder that the person who seems to have most benefited from his absence isn't Israel, but the guy who wanted him gone for years. Because for Nick, Charlie Kirk and TPUSA stood in the way of pulling the MAGA movement farther to the right. It's why he declared war on Charlie in part along this same line.
I don't think they believe that Christ is king. I think that at Turning Point USA, they're a little confused. At Turning Point, they think that Israel is king.
That was just this past summer. And for years, Groypers hounded Charlie Kirk on the question of Israel at his events. But now that he's gone, Nick Fuentes' star has risen. He's been on the right-wing Patrick Bet David podcast with nearly 3 million subscribers a month after Charlie's death, a show that called him the Tupac of MAGA, which of course Nick will now use to justify his flagrant use of the N-word. And again, Fuentes was on Tucker Carlson's show. And there have been multiple op-eds about how Nick Fuentes is now the knife's edge of MAGA and is stepping in as Charlie Kirk's successor. He is the future. The conservative writer Rod Dreyer, a close friend of J.D. Vance, warned, I am told by someone in a position to know that something like 30 to 40% of D.C. GOP staffers under the age of 30 are Groypers. Yikes. And the neocons, the conservative Zionists, and Nick Fuentes himself all seem to know it.
And I would bet you a lot of money that if Charlie Kirk lived a little bit longer, he would have brought me to Turning Point as well.
Nick is fulfilling his goal he laid out in 2021 when he explained what the point of the Groypers is, saying, "We are the right-wing flank of the Republican Party, and if we didn't exist, the Republican Party would be falling backwards all the time, constantly falling backwards, receding into the left and the center, so we've got to be on the right, dragging these people, kicking and screaming into the future, into a right-wing, into a truly reactionary party." Man, if we only had an equivalent on the left, you know, but for things like paid family leave and, you know, a 30-hour work week. And just why? And Tucker Carlson knows it. Listen to Nick explain his extremist strategy to Tucker.
The base is extremely conservative, extremely anti-left, but the Republican Party, like those that represent them, are not at all. They're very, a lot of them are atheists, a lot of them are gay, a lot of them are feminists. And so I said, like, we kind of need to rally, like Trump did, rally the base against the establishment and then take the fight to the left as the true alternative. And if you can win that, then you win the country. That was kind of Trump's model.
Yeah, that was Trump's model. Saying the most extreme thing possible, usurping the GOP and hypnotizing the media. That's what Trump did. And Tucker gives Nick his flowers.
What did you see as like the most important gatekeepers? I mean, Dave Rubin, though, does he matter?
No, not really.
Right. I mean, Dave Rubin is like, I don't know. Do people watch Dave Rubin?
They did back then. I mean, because you got to consider they were kind of like the ascendant new media, you know, they represented the next big thing.
I mean, and Ben Shapiro seems irrelevant to me now.
Now, but back then for
no,
the
I
young,
guess that's,
he
that's
was huge.
True.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you won.
Ugh, there's that smile again. No, out spirit. And because of that Tucker Fuentes love, conservative Zionists lost their damn minds and desperately have been trying to put the cat back in a bag that they themselves let out a long time ago, back when Donald Trump came down that escalator in 2015. The interview prompted Ben Shapiro to come out with an entire Nick Fuentes takedown video, pointing to all the awful aspects of the Groyper movement without an inkling of self-awareness.
They call themselves the Groypers. They are white supremacists. They hate women, Jews, Hindus, many types of Christians, brown people of a wide variety of backgrounds, blacks, America's foreign policy, and America's constitution.
You, also you, mostly you. Look, remember, Ben Shapiro is the guy that wants to pardon the murder of George Floyd, says Palestinians like to live in open sewage, thinks the Barbie movie is feminist propaganda, and is against mass migration from people who don't share our values.
We don't want mass migration from countries that don't share our values. Right. I don't care whether they're brown, whether they're green, whether they're white. Like, it doesn't make a difference to me. If you come from a country where you are used to gigantic government services that take care of you and you're coming here to be reliant on those government services, or you don't share American feelings about how family ought to work or about how government ought to work or about many of these values, I don't care if you're pulling those people from Latin America, whether you're pulling those people from like the most liberal parts of Europe. Like, that doesn't matter to me. The ideology of the people who are coming in matters to me.
With that level of xenophobia from the right, the question isn't how did the right turn that xenophobia on to Jewish people, but how did conservative Jews like Ben Shapiro expect it not to? The very premise of the Great Replacement Theory, which Tucker Carlson has trafficked in for years.
In a country that has been taken over by a leadership class that actually despises them and their values and their history and their culture and their customs, really hates them to the point that it's trying to replace them.
This is the replacement theory, but it
was not a theory, it's a reality.
The very premise of that is white Republicans are being replaced by brown Democratic voters imported from the third world. And who's doing the importing? The Jews. Tucker doesn't say that, but that's the theory. Know your own theories, Ben. This is like me not knowing Cardi B facts. It's embarrassing. The freakout over Carlson and Fuentes also came from the Jewish Conservative Coalition that held up signs at a recent event reading, "Tucker is not MAGA," while standing in front of Randy Nuke Palestinians Fine. And the backlash also came specifically from conservative Zionists within the Heritage Foundation, the right-wing think tank that not only helped to craft Project 2025, but something called Project Esther, which specifically targets pro-Palestinian students through doxing and auditing, threatening their immigration status, and charging them using RICO, all under the guise of fighting alleged anti-Semitism, which is ironic because the whole time it's been the right that has been grooming its audience with real anti-Semitism. However, the rupture of Heritage really came after its leader, Kevin Roberts, said this in response to the conservative anger over the Tucker Fuentes interview.
I disagree with, and even abhor, things that Nick Fuentes says. But canceling him is not the answer either. When we disagree with a person's thoughts and opinions, we challenge those ideas in debate. And we have seen success in this approach as we continue to dismantle the vile ideas of the left. Conservatives should feel no obligation to reflexively support any foreign government, no matter how loud the pressure becomes from the globalist class or from their mouthpieces in Washington.
Good for you, Kev, except you're going to be spending the next few weeks apologizing profusely for what you just said. Since that remark, Jewish groups have pulled out of Heritage, including the Zionist Organization of America, Young Jewish Conservatives, and the Coalition for Jewish Values and Combat Anti-Semitism Movement. David Bernstein, a former member of the Project Esther Task Force, also resigned, decrying the links with Tucker and Fuentes to be a venomous coalition. Yeah, the venomous coalition you were super happy to be a part of until it turned on you. Conservative Zionists are perhaps the biggest and most obvious victims of the Leopards Eating People's Faces party. They were cool when the leopards were going after Muslims, black people, trans people, and even Jews who supported Palestine. And now they're like, no, 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 eat the face of some Jews, not all Jews. You know the difference, right? The lie conservative Zionists have bought into is that Trump and the MAGA movement are friends of the Jews, despite all the evidence to the contrary. Trump, a guy who calls Jewish business people Shylocks, who according to the wife he has buried on his golf course had a book of Hitler speeches on his nightstand, a man who inspired hate crimes like the toppling of Jewish headstones after his first election, or the Tree of Life synagogue massacre, a guy who berates Jewish Americans for not being Jewish enough when they vote Democrat, and a guy who called hordes of tiki torch virgins screaming Jews will not replace us very fine people.
Very fine people on both sides.
And a guy who's willing to support Israel's ethnic cleansing of Palestinians despite the anti-Semitic backlash that that project creates. So it's pretty pathetic to watch conservative commentators like Josh Hammer of Newsweek try to condemn Tucker in hopes of saving the party from going full Nazi.
The problem is not really Nick Fuentes. The problem is Tucker Carlson. And unless and until Kevin Roberts, the Heritage Foundation, and all of the American right, all of MAGA, all of the conservative movement, unless and until we all come together and realize the absolute moral monster, the unmistakable coward, and just the hideous, hideous broadcaster that Tucker Carlson has tragically descended into, following his ouster from Fox News, unless and until we all have that reckoning, Dr. Roberts, Vice President Vance, all of Tucker's close allies, unless and until we have that, this is going to keep on happening and happening and happening, because they will not be satisfied until the Jews are kicked out of the right, Christian evangelicals are severely diminished, if not kicked out altogether, and MAGA is destroyed. That is their goal.
Yes, that is the goal. But it's not the whole goal.
And the thing about Josh Hammer, at the end of the day, he is not an American. No, Josh, you're not American. There's nothing American about you. You don't fucking look American. You don't sound American. Your wife's not American. You're not American. And you're not American, maybe most importantly, because you will never put America first. So if you believe that Israel is the foundation of Western civilization, if you believe the Hebrew Bible matters so much, if you have such a problem with Americans like me and Tucker Carlson, then why don't you go to Israel?
There we go. That's the Groypers' goal. The conclusion of Christian nationalism and extreme xenophobia. Leaving the country. Which is kind of funny, because it's also the conclusion of Christian Zionism, but done through a lens of befriending and defending the Jews instead of antagonizing them. Ultimately, this split is a debate over which freeway to take to rid the world of Jewish people. Nick Fuentes and actual Nazis are winning the battle for the soul of the Republican Party, which is pretty easy to do when your party has no soul. And if you're a conservative, you know they're winning because you're on all the group chats. And if Charlie Kirk was a firewall against the right leaving Zionism behind, then that's gone. And the Groypers won. And again, Nick knows it.
And slowly but surely, you will be encircled and you will be surrounded, and one day you're going to wake up in the Groyper Party. GOP is going to stand for a different thing. They say this is a small radical fringe. It isn't. This is mainstream now. Nick Fuentes is mainstream now. You're going to have to deal with that.
And now it's time for the Groyper Army to move on. On to other, bigger fish.
Now, if Vance condemns the Groypers, we are deploying to Iowa. Raise your right hand. I swear I'm going to move to Iowa. And New Hampshire, and Nevada, and South Carolina, and one primary after the next. And we will go to every town hall. We will go to every meet and greet where there's four or five people, and we will be there.
And they're already out there asking Vance similar questions that they asked of Charlie Kirk.
I'm a Christian man, and I'm just confused why that there's this notion that we might owe Israel something, or that they're our greatest ally, or that we have to support this multi-hundred-billion-dollar foreign aid package to Israel to cover this, to quote Charlie Kirk, ethnic cleansing in Gaza. I'm just confused why this idea has come around, considering the fact that not only does their religion not agree with ours, but also openly supports the prosecution of ours.
Look, even when J.D. Vance divorces Usha because Fuentes says he's a race traitor to then marry Erica Kirk, who really, really wants it, even then, it's not going away. Nick Fuentes says he doesn't even care about the Republican Party winning in the next election.
You're going to need us in the next election, so you better figure out how you're going to negotiate the end of your rule in America, or it's going to come tumbling down one way or another. I don't care if the GOP loses. We have to be willing to let Vance or Rubio, whoever it is, we have to be willing to let them lose in the primary, in the general, whatever it takes. Has to be America first.
Yes, King. Let them lose. Where's my popcorn? But of course the right is freaking out about the possible split in future elections, like my favorite paisan from the PBD podcast.
One's going to tell you to go this way. Somebody's going to tell you to go this way. The one guy that's pro-Israeli, they're going to say go this way. It's going to be so splintered, and sitting and waiting in the wings is Gavin Newsom going, hey.
God, Vinny, you were so close to a perfect fantasy there, but you killed it with the Gavin Newsom talk. Ugh. Talk about edging. I was so close. The bets are on. Will either the Republican or the Democratic Party be able to stop this actual anti-Semitic rise of the right by addressing the very real concerns that give it so much life and stop aiding the crimes that Israel's committing with American taxpayer dollars? Will the Republican Party embrace full Nazism in an effort to maintain power? Sorry, the first one was rhetorical, the second one was not, because the answer is yes. They probably will. Either way, what's playing out is the natural conclusion of the right's hateful ideology. The ultimate, we f***ing told you so. Centrists and the media have been Tom and Jerrying it this whole time, waiting for anti-Semitism to pop out from a mouse hole called left, when it's always come from the right. And for the left, our version of America First isn't jingoism or racism. It's a multiracial democracy that works for everyone. It's universal healthcare. It's job guarantees. It's taxing billionaires. It's fighting for a livable future for all. And yes, ending support for genocide abroad. Thank you guys so much for watching the Bituation Room's deep dives. Thank you to Brent Godin, to Paige Omek, and to Andy Vasoyan, our little mighty team. Please support this team by becoming a patron, patreon.com/bituationroom, or by becoming a member on YouTube or a paid member on Substack, frannyfeo.substack.com. It goes a long way to help this team and all of the Nick Fuentes and Tucker Carlson clips that I had to look at for this, which was not, you know, good. I had to wipe away some blood from my eyes at multiple times. So please go and do that. Thank you so much for your support, and share this video with everyone and anyone who will listen.
And if you want, by becoming a patron, you also get access to the postscript, which is going to be an extra 5 minutes about my reflections on doing this video. So become a patron and get at that. Bye.
That was Francesca Fiorentini. You can look up the Bituation Room at YouTube and subscribe to her channel if you like.